Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Discover luxurious duvet sets today. Visit harrycurry.com for stylish comfort this spring.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text, as you know, joe at rte.ie and 0818 715 815. Caitlin Kavanagh. Caitlin, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you as well.
I'm so sorry this has befallen you, and I know your mother is beside you, and she's the one you were performing, Caitlin, and performing brilliantly on the streets of Wexford. And your mother, Alice, is with you there. Alice, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? Alice, Caitlin's there with us. You witnessed it from just opposite Caitlin. What happened on Sunday, March the 30th, in the centre of Wexford town, one of the nicest streets in the country, and this awful, awful incident befell you, Alice?
It was a brilliant day, Joe. Late-ish, kind of Sunday evening. It was busking with a couple of younger friends.
Okay, Alice, sorry, we're going to try and get a better line. It's a pity. We'll try and get a better line. Caitlin, from what I hear, what I heard your few words there, your line might be somewhat better. You were busking, Caitlin. What instrument were you playing, and have you bussed there before?
I was indeed. More so, I was connected to my aux, and I was singing mostly. I'm a vocalist.
Right.
And one of my friends accompanied me, and he played the guitar for myself.
Okay.
For a few songs. And that was my first time busking. I have done private performances before,
okay,
but that is the first time I've taken to the streets of Wexford.
And you sound brilliant, by the way, in the little
recording
I have. And then out of the blue, on this lovely Sunday afternoon, as I say, in a lovely street, in a lovely town, but this incident has besmirched Wexford town. Not the people of Wexford, but besmirched Wexford town. What happened, Caitlin?
So essentially what happened was I was singing a song, and there was a male who passed me with a buggy.
Yeah.
And he had leaned into me and he was saying something, but I couldn't quite make out what he was saying to me. It was only until I heard the altercation that the man had with my mother that I realized that there was an issue of sorts. But essentially, looking back at the recordings and witnessing half of the interaction firsthand, it was a barrage of racist abuse and threats against my mother and against myself. That's essentially what happened.
Completely, completely nasty, completely horrible, completely out of the blue. And what was your reaction, Caitlin?
Firstly, I mean, I did try to remain calm because, firstly, I wanted to assess the situation because, like I said, I didn't know what was going on at the first half. So, firstly, I decided to go over and see, okay, what's happening and why.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as my mother started being the victim of racial slurs and abuse, that's when I will admit that I did lose my temper a bit. And so I went over to sort of back her up.
Yeah, rightly so, rightly so. Alice is back. Now, hopefully on a better line, I'm sure. Alice, good afternoon again. Alice, you're standing there. Caitlin is making her debut. She's a powerful voice, busking as so many people do on a lovely Sunday afternoon. Happened to be Mother's Day. Well, when did you realise it was getting nasty, this young chap, maybe in his 20s or early 30s, with a buggy, Alice?
He was walking by, really. It was a public area.
Yeah.
His female companion said something in a loud voice. It was kind of jokey. I didn't think anything of it. I didn't think it was addressed to myself or my daughter or anyone else. But he seemed then to respond by singing at Caitlin some sort of made up lyrics about Chinese food, and there was a mock and jeer in his voice.
Yeah.
And sort of really, it couldn't really quite be mistaken for anything else. It was kind of really just jeery. So I confronted him and I said, "What did you say to her?" And that was when the whole thing just went off tangent, really. Obviously I suppose he did not like being stopped, maybe, or asked, even so.
Confronted,
yeah.
That's right, yeah.
And Alice, then he turned on you.
He basically unleashed a barrage of insults and threats. So I just listened to him, I suppose, and to see basically what else does he have in his arsenal, really, because he was firing the same shots over and over again. I'll kill you. I'll kill you. So,
yeah.
And then he said, I'll get her to kill you. And then he said, come down the alley with me and I'll get her to kill you. So, so that was the gist of his tirade, I suppose.
Obviously, the Gardaí room. You videoed it, which was, or somebody, who sent us a clip? I know you sent us a clip, Alice, but who had the good sense to record this?
It was myself, who was recording Caitlin.
Yes,
singing,
yes.
And when it happened, I had the phone in my hand and I just lowered the phone without realizing that the recording was still going on. And it was only upon reaching home and Caitlin and I were looking through the videos that I took of her singing that we chanced upon this clip and said, oh, it just ran and ran and we have it all on audio. So I said, well, then that is what we will give to the gods.
Yeah. And you sent it in to us. I think people should hear it. I hope you do as well, Alice. I really think it's important for people to realise the venom that was in this man's voice.
That's right. And the volume of his,
Okay, obviously our listeners won't be able to see the pictures. It is very disturbing. But was he... What were his gestures, Alice, as he was unleashing this invective?
Extremely intimidatory.
Okay.
He is. I'm not a big woman. I'm barely 5'2". I'm not yet 100 pounds. But so any man really would be taller than me. But he was practically on top of me, and he was yelling down at me. And his female companion was sort of at some point lunging at me, sort of like trying to maybe, I don't know, just kind of, you know, like lunging and sort of stepping up to me. So those were the gestures.
Sorry, come in, Caitlin, sorry.
Oh, with that, it was just to give my mother a bit of a scare. That's how I interpreted the gesture.
And he was kind of, from what I can gather, now I know he's moving left, right, centre, and excuse me, he's shouting, but he's kind of squaring up to your mother.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And that did not sit right with me, so hence I came over to just make sure that everything was okay in case anything did arise.
Okay, well done. Well, this is the tape I've told people there's a bad language in it and racist slurs, which are horrific, but this is what happened. Caitlin, a young musician going about her artistic endeavours, as many do on that particular street in Wexford, and her mother, who happened to be there filming this, her Caitlin's international debut on the streets of Wexford, and you'll hear a wonderful voice, I hope, at the start. But this is the audio version. Now, you haven't put it up on social media, so this will be the first time a lot of people would have actually even heard it.
I'm singing to her. What the fuck is your problem? Oh, I hear you. I hear you. I'm not hit you soon as any man.
Really?
Touch me. I'll see what I'm going to do. I'm going to watch what I'm doing now.
Just give me an excuse. Just touch me. Just give me an excuse. Touch me.
Come on. What's his problem?
If she touches me, I'll cut me. Wait, watch what I'm
doing. Come on.
For your own sake, go now. Go now! Go! Now! Go! Go now! I'm gonna get her to kill you. Do you want me to get her to kill you? Do you want me to get her to kill you? Do you want me to get her to kill you? I'm gonna get her to kill you.
What happened to you?
You Chinese whore. Go back to
what happened to you?
Oh, walk away. Walk away.
I got to put your hat. She steps into the partner
and we're walking on and then start recording the faces.
Running away.
I don't want her to get hit. I don't
Don't give a fuck for you, you Chinese bastard. What are you going to do? Stop touching me. Why are you pushing me?
Touching me.
Bye bye.
Caitlin, I'll go to Caitlin first. Caitlin, you were lucky not to be assaulted. I know you were verbally assaulted. And your mother was lucky given the venom in his and her voice.
Yes, it is something that I have come to terms with after the situation. Mm-hmm. See, it was all happening so fast. Yes, I didn't have time to think, sure, what if I get hit? What if Ma gets hit? I didn't have time to sort of just mull over it. My first instinct was to just go in there and, well, react accordingly to the situation. Mm-hmm. My mother and I were being threatened, and so I went to her aid, really. But yes, the possibility of me or my mother or any one of the other three teenagers there getting assaulted was quite high. And I do realise that I'm quite fortunate to have escaped.
And Alice, did you feel that you're... Well, like, he was up to your face, and as you say, you're not 7 foot two. You were smaller than him, so to speak. But given the venom in his voice, did you think you were going to be assaulted? He said, I'm going to effing kill you.
I don't know if he would swing, to be honest, Joe. At that point, I didn't know if he was going to physically hit me or whether his female companion was going to maybe hit me. But I wasn't going to move because I didn't feel like I needed to move. I was there before and I said, I'm going to be here. This is where I'm standing. He's the one walking past, not me. So why should I go? Was my thought. And also... afterwards, there were people listening to Caitlin. They were sitting outside a local, popular local pub, Mackens, and some of the gents came up to me and said that they were watching it. And if he had possibly taken things further, that they would have intervened. So I was also aware of the fact that there were other people around. So I wasn't, you know, really sort of terrified. I was just kind of watching to see what else he would say or do.
And as Simon Burke says in the Wexford People, he was inches away from your face as he was shouting this.
He was very, very close, yes.
And were you conscious of, one, where the buggy was? Because this was in broad daylight, listeners. This was on a sunny Sunday afternoon. This man come, I don't know, would, insofar as you could see, Alice or Caitlin, was there a baby in the buggy?
There was a baby in the buggy because I told him, why don't you bring the baby home?
My God.
Was what I said to him, why don't you just bring your baby home? And he was pushing the buggy with the baby in it.
And he was saying to you, as we heard there in the clip, just touch me, give me an excuse, give me an excuse.
Right.
And were you conscious of where the buggy was and where his companion was, the female, when he was laying into you verbally?
His companion was behind him. He was pushing the buggy. The buggy was in front of him. His companion was behind him. I did not speak to her, his partner.
But the lady addressed
Caitlin.
She sure did.
She spoke to Caitlin, and I think she tried to say that I had said something to the man, and that she was afraid that you know, something would happen, and possibly she was insinuating I had provoked him first. But I did not, as far as
Who can see the pictures and indeed hear them, the it's hard at times to work out the sequence in the audio alone, but the Gardaí have seen the video, haven't they, this tape?
They have seen the video.
Okay. And our understanding is they are taking it quite seriously. They say they're treating it now as a hate crime. which is pretty serious.
This is what I understand. Yeah. This is what I understand, Joe. And I personally decided to sort of report this and to share it.
It's because,
Joe, I think for any number of laws that we enact, they are still just pieces of paper if we do not enforce them.
Yeah.
And enforcement is the issue. We can have any amount of legislation, but if no one ever gets prosecuted, what is the point of legislation? I had an encounter years ago.
Okay.
On a much more minor scale, a lady had rolled down her car window and shouted some racial slur at me. I laughed it off, to be honest. But when I went home, my husband said, make a guard report. And I did. And the guards did what they could. They were very diligent. They brought the case to the court. After several delays in hearing, because the lady, the woman who shouted it was unwell, and it had to be delayed. And then finally, I appeared in court. She was there in court. Her solicitor was there in court. But the judge decided then that I have no idea why, but he told the guard the case is closed. We did not either of us step into the courtroom.
Okay.
And when I asked the guard, why did he not postpone it? Why did he just close it? He said, I'm sorry, I don't know. And it's not the fault of the guardi, because they've done all the work. The case file was there. The notes were there. And they put in all the work just for a judge to close the file and said, the case is closed. And it never... So what is the point of legislation, Joe?
And I'll give you the full Garda statement. Gardaí received a report of a public order incident that occurred on North Main Street in Wexford Town at approximately 6:30 p.m. on the 30th of March. Gardaí are investigating this incident as a hate crime. Investigations are ongoing. Now, it's a couple of weeks since it happened. Have you had any contact from the guards?
I have been kept informed that they are pursuing it.
Okay.
It only happened on Mother's Day, which is the third. Yeah. So a week and some, I think.
Yeah, we.
So the guards have been very good. I think they've done everything they needed to do, what they wanted to do, and so I'm leaving it with the guards.
But as I say, they're treating it as a hate crime. Caitlin, obviously I don't want any identification, but did anyone recognise this man and woman?
None of us did. We have no idea who they are, nor have we ever seen them before. At least I haven't.
Yeah, but his voice is very identifiable in the audio, if anyone knew him. I know the Gardaí, the investigations are ongoing. Caitlin, given that Wexford has such a good reputation, narrow streets, some of the streets now are actually roofed at various times, which is a brilliant idea. It had the flagpole last year, it's having the flagpole back this year in August. Caitlin, will you go busking again?
Definitely, because while I realise that this event was slightly upsetting, I've decided not to let it deter me or stop me from doing what I love. You know me, I'm a musician. I've been pursuing vocals for a lot of my life, and I figured now is really the time for me to get out there and share what I love with other people, because, well, not only is there a love for vocalism there, but there's also a love for performance. You know, I like talking to people who come to see me once in a while. I like to spread the joy. I like to, you know, have the good vibes, as you would call them. But definitely I wouldn't let an incident like this deter me at all, because unfortunately it is common knowledge between us musicians, and many people in the music community would be able to sort of back me up here, that as a busker we will all of us will face harassment at some point. And with this specific incident, it's also taught me to be a bit more vigilant and wary, so I can sort of prepare. It's given me an idea of, if I were to be harassed, what is definitely going to be the first point of attack there. But no, I won't be put off by this. I'm not scared. I'm going to go out and do it again. I'll do what I love.
Yeah, well done. Well done. Alice?
Yeah.
Are you going to... will you go out with Caitlin again?
Joe, I trade at the Bullery Market where the incident took place. It was closed on the Sunday. Yeah. I trade every weekend. Yeah. I will trade every weekend, as I have done for the last several years. I love Wexford. and people are 99% fantastic, and our streets are, as you say, beautiful.
Yeah.
And people should be allowed to walk their own streets. A lot of locals are saying the town is not safe. People are roaming around in marauding gangs, causing mayhem on a regular basis, to the point where shop owners are saying retail is down, and people just feel that maybe they cannot let their teens or their young people go out about their own town. That is not right.
Yeah.
And that is something has to be done, Joe. Why should the local community be afraid to go into their own town?
Yeah.
That just does not make sense. And it is a beautiful town.
And do you think some of the locals, when this abuse was ongoing, and some of the locals then said to you subsequently, well, if anything physical had happened, we would have intervened. But do you think they were reticent to intervene in the first place because they might have been afraid of this individual?
It is possible. I mean, it's hard for me to sort of guess why, but I expect it is human nature, really, to hold back before jumping in case, you know, before what really is going on. People don't want to be seen to be impetuous or jumping to conclusions. So it might be a bit of that. It might be a bit of fear because of the manner he was speaking and his physical gestures. That it could be a bit of that. At any rate, I don't know. But I do think that if he had gone any further, that people would have intervened because that is at least what I believe.
And at one stage, again, he's shouting at you, spittle flying. Oh. He's shouting at you up to your face saying, come on, just touch me, just touch me, just touch
me.
That's
right.
In other words, give me, and it is not an excuse. He's saying to you, give me a reason for me to hit you. And the word he was using was to kill you.
It makes no sense. No matter how many times you hear it, it just makes absolutely no sense what he's saying. I mean, who would say that to anyone, whether it be a man to a man or a man to a woman or a child? It just, that is just not anything anyone would say to anyone.
And you mentioned you're in the Bullring. You mentioned there was one incident before in traffic. Have there been other incidents, Alice, and have the public or friends or whatever, or people onlookers, have they intervened? Have there been other incidents?
There have been other incidents. The level of intervention, to be honest, possibly could be higher. I have four children. So at various stages, I mean, they would be going about their business in town, and they would meet, they would encounter such incidents. Like my younger daughter, my third child, younger than Caitlin, she's 16 this year.
Okay.
I suppose a couple of years ago, she was just out with friends, and she had a cigarette butt flung at her. Somebody flung a cigarette butt at her and sort of called her some racial remarks and that kind of thing, and sort of just was mocking her. And there were people walking past, and at that point no one intervened. And when she came home to tell me, I was quite annoyed that no one had stepped up on behalf of who was obviously a minor. And you know, I just thought, well, that's a shame, you know, that people didn't sort of step in and say, what is going on here?
Some people didn't hear the initial audio. Again, to bring home the impact of what was happening, Caitlin and her mother, and indeed on people looking around, looking onlookers, but it was directed at Caitlin and her mother. It began with some racial abuse, and then it escalated rapidly into just hatred, which is why the Gardaí are now treating as a hate crime. Here's the episode again, as recorded by Alice.
Laissez-moi,
I'm singing to her.
What the fuck is your problem?
Oh, I hear you, I hear you. You know, I hit you sooner than any man.
What,
touch me, and I'll see what it comes to. I'm gonna watch what I'm doing now. Thank you.
Just give me an excuse. Just touch me. Just give me an excuse. Just touch me.
Come on, what's his problem?
If she touches me, I'm catching his way. Watch what
I'm doing. Come on.
For your own sake, go now. Go now! Go! Now! Go! Go now! I'm gonna get her to kill you. Do you want me to get her to kill you? I'm gonna get her to kill you.
What happened to you?
You Chinese whore.
What happened to you?
Walk away.
Come on.
Oh yeah, I know you well. Got it all, honey. Thank you very much.
Well, Caitlin and Alice, you showed remarkable composition and composure and fortitude when he's screaming and prompting you to escalate it in his eyes. And I'd remind listeners, this guy, whose voice you hear there, and the woman standing beside him, we don't know if but the man was pushing a buggy with a baby in it. Believe it or not, in broad daylight. Okay, Alice and Caitlin, I'm sure the Gardaí, well, as we say, they're treating it as a hate crime. I'm sure anyone in Wexford that has any information will give it to the Gardaí as soon as possible. And I think the good people of Wexford will not tolerate that horror that was visited on you. I can't apologise on their behalf, but I can say to you, Alice and Caitlin, I'm so sorry you had to go through this. And as you say, there have been incidents before, but I just hope the reaction we're getting, which is deep, deep upset at what you went through, will be transmitted, and I've no doubt the Gardaí will take it as seriously as it deserves. Caitlin Kavanagh, keep artistic, keep singing, keep composing, keep performing, Caitlin. Keep up your good humour and good nature. And
Will do.
Great. There's
plenty to come, lads.
Great. Brilliant. And is Alice your manager, Caitlin? Would she be travelling around the world?
Not at all.
You couldn't manage her. Well,
okay. You couldn't manage her, Joe.
Okay, brilliant. Okay, Alice, stay well. And if you're in the Bullring, I was in Wexford about 5 weeks ago. And by the way, Alice, I was in a number of taxis and I was really struck, because you reiterated it today, I was really struck by what taxi drivers were saying to me about drugs in Wexford town, and a number of them were getting out of business because they felt threatened. I was really taken aback, but you've reiterated it there on unprompted.
It is the ground sentiment, Joe. I mean, there is a lot of sentiment on the ground. So
okay, well,
the powers to be need to put their ear to the ground.
Yeah, well, maybe this is a call. This is a call. Alice Kavanagh and Caitlin Kavanagh, thank you so much. And I hope nothing like this ever befalls you again, Joe. And I hope the culprits are brought to justice. Joe@rt.ie, 51551 is our text number. 0818715815 is the main number. But Joe@rt.ie is the simplest email from anywhere in the wide earthly world.
Talk to Joe on 0818715815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe@rt.ie, there is a frightening photograph on the front of the Irish News this morning, the Belfast-based newspaper, and it is of the gorse fires in the mountains of Mourne, which you've heard over the last few days. Absolutely shocking photograph in terms of the fear. I think people often see gorse fires as being miles away and they don't threaten, but there's the firefighters right up against it. Now, Hilary is in Kerry. Hilary, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. You've been up, you've been beside the fires on the Ring of Kerry, and I presume you haven't seen the photograph in the Irish News, but I presume they are as frightening.
Oh, they're terrifying. They really are. I'm on the Barra Peninsula and we look over on the Ring of Kerry, but we have fire going in Lorrach at the moment, which is just outside Kenmare. And I've... These fires, they happen every year. I mean, it's awful that we're back here again in the same place. Yeah. And the fires are started in the same place and it's out of season. And it's like a tinderbox here. We've had no rain. The wind is quite strong. And just looking over the Ring of Kerry, there's just this kind of plume of smog that just goes on for miles and miles. So it just missed a school yesterday. I mean, the fire brigade have been incredible. They always are. They're exhausted. They work really hard. I don't know why they keep happening, why the law isn't enforced. And like what your last caller was saying, which she was so brave, and that was so shocking, her story. But she was saying you've got to enforce the law.
And
you've
Hilary, what is the view now? Is there still smog and smoke and...
Yeah, and afterwards the mountains are desecrated because they spread. They don't. There's nothing. It's like this is the time when nature is renewing itself, and
of course,
and birds are nesting and mammals are breeding, and there's nothing on the land. It's just black. It's just there's no life on it. It's completely silent, and it's just devastating. It's devastating for everybody who lives around here and people who visit. And it's coming into the tourist season, and you know, you drive by these swathes of, you know, just black smoky land with nothing on it, and it takes years to recover because they get out of control. You know, they are meant to be managed, and there is a time when you can do it. And it's not a tourist going up the mountain on private property in the middle of the night.
We don't know how it starts. Yeah, Maura the Cove. Stay there, Hilary. Maura, good afternoon. I know Maura is principal of the community school in Tahilla in South Kerry. But you got a call at one stage to say your school might be in danger, Maura.
Hello, Joe. I did indeed. A few of the parents live just up from the school and they alerted me to the situation, and I sent on a few videos. It came very, very close now.
And when you got to the school, when you saw the videos, do people through photographs or even descriptions or visuals, do people get a real sense of the Hilary communicated it there, a real sense of the fear that these gorse fires can?
I suppose the thing about it is, Joe, like you can see it from a distance. I was talking to one of the firemen today.
Yeah.
And he was saying that you can see it. And all of a sudden the wind picks up and it's right in front of you. You know, it's far away and then the wind just carries it across, and within minutes it's right up where you know, they came out to the back of our school.
Yeah.
And he could see it from far away. And just while they were getting set up, the fire had come across through the fields, you know, in just minutes. It takes off. I think as well, Joe, like it's been really, really hot down here the last week or two, the last couple of days in particular. It's been very, very intense heat. And the land is all dry, so,
of course,
you know, if it happened in early February or whatever, it mightn't have taken off because of the rain, you know.
But it has taken off.
Has it
ever affected your school before, Maura?
It did, actually. Well, before I was here, there was a similar fire that had come from the other direction of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And the same thing, like, thank God, the firemen are fantastic. And as a local community school, like, we're very involved with the community, and we know Brilliant. Teddy McCarthy is the main man who's leading up all the efforts, you know. Mm-hmm. And in fairness, like, they're just flat to the mat now. They're still working on it today, even though it started on Monday at 3 o'clock. We were driving home from school and we saw the fire brigade at the beginning of it, like, and 2 days later, like, they're still at the other side of the mountain now trying to trying to keep it under control at the fire site.
So there's still smog and smoke. Is the wind dispersed, or is there
there's
a wind
still fire, to disperse? Like, there's still fire on the other side of the mountain.
Yeah.
It just has travelled across. Like, it's so, you see, the land is so vast. Like, it's
course,
all,
yeah.
Yeah, it's all mountainy, vast land, you know.
And it's beautiful, beautiful.
Gorgeous.
Land as well.
Gorgeous, yeah. But it's black now today.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay, Maura, the school is still sitting, as they say.
Yeah, thanks be to God.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. No, we're very grateful. Yeah.
Thanks, Maura.
Yeah, we had great faith. We had great faith in the fire service.
You really have.
They would protect us, yeah.
And I hope I hope the powers that be, the firefighters are probably out sweating and working and hosing down as best they can, but I hope the powers that be hear that, because the fire service, the retained fire service around the country is absolutely brilliant. Maura de Coghlan, yeah. Gormila Maugad, Hillary.
Gormila Maugad,
Slán and Hillary, thank you so much. Joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Barry Harbison is in Raheny in Dublin. Barry, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
I'm exhausted reading your email about what you went through to...
Well, my issue sounds quite trivial compared with Caitlin's. Nonetheless,
I appreciate you saying that. But take us through, because prize bonds are part of the state savings scheme. We're encouraged to buy prize bonds because it goes into the state, so to speak. You don't get interest, but you can redeem them at face value after a certain period. And in the meantime, part of what would be the interest obviously goes to the state, but part of it is used for prizes, and they're regarded as a patriotic gift. So you set out to buy prize bonds, this
correct
mammoth journey, this odyssey.
My first granddaughter was born just before Christmas, and just like an aunt had bought prize bonds for me when I was born many, many moons ago, I thought it was a nice gesture to buy prize bonds for my first granddaughter. And as you say, patriotic, it's a good investment, mm-hmm. It's a safe investment, all that. So I completed the state savings, the prize bond gift application. I have a specific gift application form according to their instructions. Next thing, I arrive up at post office number one, mm-hmm. where they said in order to process it, firstly, I needed to register or complete an application to get a state savings customer number in order to buy anything more than €100 worth of prize bonds. Now, actually, the form says between 25 and 250,000, but let's ignore the form. It's an Iron State savings form. Now, I knew that was incorrect, or I was thinking that was incorrect based on the information that I had read on their website. So I went to a second post office elsewhere. Now, they confirmed that I brought all the necessary documentation with me. If you read on panel D on the application form, it asks for the completed application, proof of name, proof of address, proof of PPS number. So I brought a utility bill, I brought photo ID, both my driving license and my passport. I brought the completed form and revenue documentation showing my PPS number.
Yeah.
As their checklist, as printed on their form, requested. So, get this bit. Not included on their checklist, but requested at the post office, was photo ID for my 3-month-old granddaughter.
I forgot.
Now, sarcastically, I did say, well, it takes 9 months to get a driving license in this country, so we haven't actually applied for her driving license yet. But anyway, called their head office of the GPO, and they said a birth cert, as I had provided, is all that was really required, and the photo ID was a common mistake that they asked for in various post offices. So I thought, we're on the go here.
Okay.
We're progressing. And I gave them the state ID, my passport, to scan so they could link that in with their computer system. And it wouldn't scan. So I gave them my PPS card. And that they couldn't get the image of that on their computer system. So I provided them with my driving license. And they couldn't get the image that they scanned on that to link in with their computer system. So all three items, although scanned, couldn't link in. So I left with nothing done. This is now 3.5 hours later, by the way. My time is probably worthless.
My God.
First call was at 5 to... First post office was 5 to 12, and this was now 25 past 3. So I contacted State Savings again and got a receptionist or somebody, and I asked if somebody from the organisation could ring me back, someone at managerial level, to explain what I actually need to do in order to process this and, you know, to find out what is consistently required in terms of documentation. I was told that...
But reminder to listeners, Barry is trying to buy prize bonds. Barry is trying to give money over the counter to the person behind the counter to buy prize bonds. Instead, at this stage, Barry has hired a wheelbarrow from Hyrol and for all the documents, and he's wheeling them around various post offices.
And I know all the anti-money laundering rules, Joe. I worked in finance. I had the necessary proof of identity, proof of source of funds, etc., etc. But anyway, I asked for them to someone to ring me back, and they said, oh, we'll have a manager call you back within 4 hours. I think we're now at 23.5 hours later, and still not a call back from Ireland State Savings as to what I need to do to give them my money. Now, I could probably go to someone like Cantor Fitzgerald and buy a Barclays bond, which will give me 2.5% return, 2.5% times the return that the Irish State Savings will, or I could register with the UK's National Savings and Investments and do it online with them. But State Savings and Post Office don't seem to care. To add a little bit of fun to it, when I spoke with your researcher this morning, I decided I'd call into a third post office.
So you got your wheelbarrow out, put all your documents in.
So I got the wheelbarrow out, went up to Dunamade, went upstairs to the post office, explained to them in the post office that post office number 2 had approved the documentation, had actually stamped it with the other post office number 2 stamp and put their group code in. And they said, guess what? They requested yet another different piece of documentation.
Nice.
They wanted proof, a utility bill from the guardian of my granddaughter's address as a form of ID. Now, I'm providing the funds, and the issue of the proof of ID is for anti-money laundering purposes. The funds were being transferred into bonds in the name of my granddaughter, so why do they suddenly need a utility bill from my daughter when it's not even listed on their application form that is required? So despite three different post offices having three different sets of requirements, none of which are listed on the State Savings application, they all had one thing in common. They all told me, oh, it's not my problem.
Yeah. And where are we now? Have you spent the 500 quid? No.
No, the 500 quid is still sitting in my account. I will transfer it to my daughter, and I presume she'll do it somehow else. But I would like State Savings, who are meant to be looking after the interests of this country and the finance country, and are meant to be professional people. You know, Joe, I worked in sales for years. If somebody had come up to me, a potential customer, prospect, and said, I want to spend money with you. And I said, oh, we've got these prime products that we're spending a king's ransom to market and promote with glossy brochures and multimedia channels, and I'm trying to sell this product. And a customer came up to me and said, or a prospect came up to me and said, oh, sorry, we can't sell you our product because we don't know why our system's not working. Bye-bye, and we won't bother calling you back.
Well, I'm plus the sentence in a long statement. Basically, they say it's anti-money laundering requirements, and it applies to all financial institutions. Acceptable documentation is required to purchase Ireland State Savings products.
Which all I have,
products.
Joe, with all due respect, I work for a software company, an Irish software company, and we specialise in AML software. So believe me, I know the various pillars of security required for AML and what's processed. That's why I produced. That's why I produced the proof of funds. That's why I produced the utility bill. That's why I produced my PPS number. And it was, you know, it's 500 euros. We're not talking about 50,000 euros here. I could pay a credit card bill for an airline flight for less than 500. So it's AML is a ridiculous issue that on post are quoting because I have provided them with any necessary documentation that is required by any financial institution to conform with AML rules.
In the absence of photo ID for a minor, we can accept a birth certificate. And we ask them what photo ID is deemed acceptable if the infant does... does that mainly involve a passport? Not many infants have passports.
Well, I have the birth cert in front of me issued on the 23rd of January 2025. I have the photo ID, the birth cert, which is my driving license.
Yeah, but it's either photo ID. They say you need photo ID, but they say we will accept a birth cert, but that's not photographic ID.
Well, it's not, but it has the address of the guardian, i.e. my mother, on it. The idea of having the photo ID, Joe, is for the source of funds rather than the recipient of the funds.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the money that's going to be laundered is coming from rather than going to. Yeah. So they want the proof of ID of who I am, and I gave them three official Irish state documents, a passport, a driving license, and a social security card that they brought out a couple of years back. All photo ID. But the problem was they said our device, scanning those documents, can't link in correctly to our software that sits in the background. It's a bit like on PUS or the post office thing in the UK, the mess on systems. They obviously need new systems in there.
Okay, and they say we're doing it for reasons and they have to be alert to the dangers of money laundering. Barry, have you ever heard of anyone who won on the prize bonds?
Well, not in... I shouldn't say this, but not in the Irish ones. I've a friend who won on the UK ones, okay, yeah.
Okay,
well, won 10 grand only 2 weeks ago.
Maybe we'll find out. Okay, onwards with your wheelbarrow, Barry Harbison. God, you deserve a Senior Scouts Endeavour medal for and a badge for what you've been doing, Barry, for your beautiful new granddaughter. That's Barry Harbison in Dublin. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Well, we obviously thought last week when the Liberation Day and when Donald Trump brought his bookies board out into the Rose Garden, that pharma, because it wasn't mentioned, a sigh of relief, would it actually be exempt, given how important pharmaceuticals are to American customers? He'd hardly want to put up the price, but then there's no hardly logic around at the minute. But and now he's talking again about special now tariffs on pharma. And there, obviously Ireland, you've heard all the figures again and again and again, the percentage, how reliant we are on pharma exports and how reliant we are in jobs. So John Toomey, for jobs, is a local historian in Ringaskiddy, County Cork. Now, as I was, John, when you look at Ringaskiddy on Google Earth, it is just a massive complex of factories. And do you remember when Ringaskiddy wasn't that way?
Good afternoon, Joe. I do well. I grew up there. I grew up in a neighbouring village, Chamberley, but they're interlinked. And I remember it well. It was, a rural district with small to medium-sized farmers, people getting employment from farmers, more of them working in the Irish Steel Holdings in Hall Bolan and other jobs in the city. And then the big announcement came of Pfizer setting up. And there was a new policy, an innovation by the IDA, to set up port-related industries in Ringaskiddy.
Okay.
And Pfizer was to be the first, and I suppose one of the first things was people were finding it hard to pronounce it. P-F-Y-Z-E-R. They're calling it Fizzer and everything like that. But I was kind of lucky in that one of my first jobs, I worked for a company who supplied chemists, and we were familiar with the name Pfizer. They had an operation in Kent in England at that stage. But this was groundbreaking news, and my abiding memory was one Saturday afternoon late in the year, three limos drove into Chamblee heading for the new site, containing Americans, the Taoiseach, the newly elected Taoiseach Jack Lynch, and some government officials. And that was the first call. And I was standing outside the pub, and there was an old horse and butt, and the rope was tied to the railings, and this was their first sight of the area of rural Ireland. And since, there's been absolute transformation and little similarity between then and now.
And as you say, you remember that Saturday afternoon.
Yes.
How soon did it become apparent that the likes of Pfizer were going to be paying wages which were a lot better than what was going, and there'd be pensions and job security? How did that realization float over?
Well, of course, I mean, obviously, they were multinational and they were big and they were American. Anything associated with America was big and followed by money. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were successful. So, I mean, it meant that anybody getting a part down there was going to be well off. And then that's how it transpired, with people going in there and their wages were being quadrupled compared to what they were getting heretofore. With everybody going in there, farmers, fishermen, carpenters, silversmiths, they were all abandoning their chosen profession to go in there to get the good money. And it was great money. They had pension schemes, share options, health insurance, everything that were made, and their families were made, you know, and a great boost into the local economy. These factories needed various supplies. As I said to one reporter the other day, the guy supplying toilet rolls
was rubbing
his hands, you see. So it was now, they're there, they opened in 1969, and they have deep roots here now.
Yeah, of course.
And I believe it will be very difficult for them to withdraw at this stage.
Mm-hmm. And the argument made by Donald Trump is he wants to bring the jobs back to he wants to bring them to America. Now,
Fair comment. Fair comment, but the thing is that I know there are, well, there are many of them down here now, but when you see the investment and the physicality of those constructions and so forth like that, and there are so many, it's like a web, there are so many components and so many strings, and that, you know, machinery and that, but then there's the workforce. And one of the great trump cards for the people down here has been the workforce. They've been reliable, well educated, and as I say, very loyal, and their production targets are generally met, and they're doing very well, and they are the jewel in the crown for many of the multinationals.
Just, John, while I have you, was there any opposition initially to this incredible transformation that was coming?
Well, the thing is that when they came first, back now in 66, late 60s, Ireland was just beginning to turn around and having a view on industry and so forth like that, and we have to give credit maybe to people like Sean Lamass and the IDA for that. But we didn't have any expertise here for handling that. For example, when these companies were allowed in, when they got planning permission, they were self-regulation.
Okay.
We didn't have any, we had no EPA, right?
Yeah.
We had the double IRS.
Our
people in the planning in the county council knew very little. And, you know, there were a few funny things went on, right? And there was a share of pollution and there were troubles. But over the years, that got sorted out, and of course we have.
Is there a sense of worry down there now, given the daily trumpeting by Trump and the daily contradictions and the daily and the nightly social media tweets? Are people worried, John?
Well, I wouldn't say worried.
Okay.
They are very conscious of it.
Yes.
And but I think from what I can sense, they have a great belief in the companies they're working for, right? And they can see how relevant they are in the overall plan of their parent companies. And I think they're believed to be very difficult for them to change. And they will be careful, all right. But I say they're not extremely worried.
Okay.
They're not extremely worried. And they, in my opinion, I don't think any of the industries here could go back to the States and replace what they have here.
Okay, and you put that.
I was speaking to somebody working for a multinational pharmaceutical company in the States last year, and he told me that they were finding it difficult to get Americans to work shifts and so on and so forth over there.
Yeah. This is a clip, by the way, from RT News. In 1971, Ronnie Turner reporting from Ringaskiddy. This is a year before the new Pfizer plant opened.
Yes. Cork today is standing on the brink of the greatest industrial leap forward ever seen in this country, provided all the industries now in the pipeline become realities. And the reason Cork men are keeping their fingers crossed is that four different concerns in recent times have indicated that they're interested in setting up in Cork, and the total investment between them is nearly £30 million.
Cork already has a sound industrial base. Firms like the Verolmi Dockyard, the Ford Motor Company, Irish Dunlop, Goulding's Fertilisers, Roof Chrome and others have been giving employment to Corkmen for many years. Then came the giant Pfizer factory at Ringaskiddy. It cost £14 million and when it opens next September, it'll employ about 300 people.
And it's interesting there, Ronnie mentions the backbone of industry at that time in Cork, Dunlop and Ford, they're gone. And
well, of course, you see, that's what time does.
Yeah,
there's a life in every industry.
Good point,
At that time, we could sense the decline in Verolme. It was a very famous Dutch shipbuilding yard, but there was a big change in that industry. All the ships were being built in the Far East in the cheap labour market.
Of course, yeah, that all came
And we had Irish Steel in Hall Boland, our only steel plant in the country. That was being heavily subsidised. And the question is, how long could this taxpayer continue doing that?
And then you had now, Goulding's was mentioned as well. They're gone. Goulding's fertilizer.
They're gone. Roof Chrome are probably gone because products they were making there are just out of date, not required anymore. And but the thing about the new plants, they were self-financing. I know they probably got some government grants and so forth like that, but they weren't going cap in hand every year to get a subsidy to keep them going for next year. So that was a monkey off the government's back.
OK, I want to go down the road, John, to Ollie Sheehan. Ollie, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And John alluded to it there, all the ancillary projects and enterprises that are dependent on the pharma factories in Ringaskiddy. You run a childcare facility.
Yes, Joe, we're in Carrigtool, and like similar, I suppose, to Ringaskiddy, you know, we would have had the traditional industries, including farming.
Okay.
And the IDA opened a business park here in Carrigtool, and it's been a huge success. We have a number of American multinationals and that in our place, I suppose, with ourselves. Like, two things about Carrigtool, say, even 25 years ago, the population was in the region of 1,000 people. Now we're at 7,500 people, and in the next 10 years, that is possibly going to double again. So it's big changes, you know. And our own childcare industry, you know, we my wife is over 40 years in childcare, but we expanded 25 years ago, and I remember some of the locals here, some of my neighbours and friends saying to me, we were mad to open a childcare facility because haven't we lots of people to look after the babies? There's no need to open a childcare facility. And, you know, we've in the region of 450 children now. So it's
India, the population, I presume, has gone up exponentially as well. But what percentage of the population would be dependent on the pharma companies?
All right. So even, say, within our own here, even with all pens now, we've approximately 40% of all pens, either one or both, would be employed by the farmer locally, you know, or linked, or linkages to it, like someone that's contracted service or whatever. So we'd be about at 40%. And, you know, within the immediate locality, that would be maybe not quite as high as that, but certainly it is a very, very significant employer locally, you know. And look, would say good quality work, good quality jobs, you know, well-paying. So from that point of view, it's a very positive thing, you know, that they are here, and long may they continue. You know, it's worked both ways. They've, you know, John mentioned there earlier about the quality of the people that work. You know, that is second to none. We might say we have the best people in Ireland, and we have, you know, we're very happy with that as well. You know,
are people worried, Ali?
All right, people are, I suppose, I might use the word concern, because I'll give you a simple example right now. Just step away, even from the farm and that. Irish Distillers is just down the road here from us. Okay. And the farmers that have contracts for malting barley, some of those contracts have been suspended for this year. The hauliers that would work for Irish Distillers, you know, they've paused production at the moment, Irish Distillers, and so someone like a local haulier here, you know, that's not easy for them if you're dependent very much on them. So there's that type of a knock-on effect, you know. And then, I suppose, you know, from a community point of view, I might say, Joe, in relation to, you know, I mentioned the figures there earlier about our community growing and expanding rapidly. Probably we're the fastest growing town in Ireland. And what we've done as a community is that we've looked at this and tried to see, right, how do we ensure that we have a sustainable community going forward, right? So under the guidance of the local community council, we've created something called the C2H 2040, which is Carrick Tool 2040.
Well done.
We've worked on it, and what we've done is basically taken the Cork County Council's development plan, and we want to enhance it. And part of that is that how do we, you know, cater for the people that will be living here and working, living, playing and resting here and enjoying our facilities here in 2040, and how do we make it attractive for those multinationals, for the people that live and work locally, to create the best possible community. And we want to create Ireland's first exemplar town where it will be,
great vim,
you know.
Great so vim, great energy, great energy, you know, great vim.
So that's where we are at present in that, you know.
Onwards, well, fingers crossed. And maybe the turmoil that's becoming worse today. What's it now? 104% tariff on every Chinese good. Chinese are at 84%. New York Times reporting that Intel are saying China are going to invade Taiwan, which is all we need. Another horror story. Maybe that will bring people back to their senses, these prospects and the change. But John Toomey and Ali Sheehan, thank you for your Cork optimism and information. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Back to prize bonds. How much did you invest, Terry? Terry, come in.
Joe.
Come in again, Terry.
Hello, can you hear me?
Loud and clear, even without the phone.
Good man.
Terry. How much did you invest?
Sorry?
Even without the phone, I think we could hear each other.
All right.
How much did you invest, old pal?
We invested €100,000.
Wow.
Now, the reason for that was very simply, my wife and I, we lived in the leafy suburbs of Dublin.
Yeah.
And we decided that we wanted to move away from it, and we'd buy a house in the country, which we did. And the proceeds that were left over from it, we invested in prize bond and state savings.
Okay.
Now, the state savings situation consisted of prize bonds was one of them, which was £100,000 or euro. Okay. And since then, that's over just a little over two years ago, we've had 26 wins on the prize bonds.
And to the value of?
For a little over €4,000.
Well, that's not bad, is it?
Well, I don't think you'd get it on interest, would you?
And how do you find out that you've won, Terry?
Oh, they send us by letter.
Okay. Now, what's the maximum prize you've won?
500. My wife is in the background here. She's giving me directions.
She's the accountant. Well, yeah, what's your wife's name, Terry?
Mary.
Mary, what's the least amount you've won?
75.
I can hear Mary there. Okay. And yeah. Do you say to yourselves, Terry and Mary, do you say to yourselves, we won £4,000, we'll take that out and spend it on ourselves?
No, not necessarily. No, we just hold it in a kind of a slush fund account. For the rainy day, if you like.
A slush fund for a rainy day. When do you envisage, if ever, taking out the 100,000?
We have no desire to do that at the moment.
Okay.
We've no need to do it. Thank God. We're quite comfortable. And, when I'm saying we're quite comfortable, we're not millionaires, but do you know what I mean? But we are very, you know, pretty, pretty fluent to the regards our finances.
And Terry and Mary, who came up with the idea? Was it you, Mary, who came up with the idea about buying the prize bonds?
No, it was me.
You, Terry, fair play.
Yeah. Oh, no, you see, I was the next postmaster.
Ah, well done, yes. Yes.
And in Kilmainham, of all places.
Oh, great spot. Great spot. Okay, so you're evangelical about the prize bonds?
Absolutely, no question about it.
What did Mary say there? Religious?
Very much religious.
Well, look after yourselves. Enjoy the. When you win on the prize bond, you won't give yourself a little treat.
No, we don't need to.
We have each other. Have we, Mary?
We're grand. What more do we need? Do we need another meal out? Do we need another price?
And Mary, do you agree with Terry?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Well done.
He's always been the financial manager in the
household. Okay, well done. Well, there's two...
When he was working as the postmaster.
Yeah, of course. Well, you sound like you're a great team, and we might need you.
We're married nearly 50 years now. Wow.
We might need you and Mary to fly out to Washington to try and knock sense into them out there, because no one else seems. Good luck, Mary. All the best.
Joe, thank you for calling me back.
Thank you, Terry. Anytime. Keep in touch. That's Terry Condon. Mark Dwyer and Sound, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Rachel Graham. Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Refresh your home this spring with new curtains. Explore our stylish collection now at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.